You're listening to Yale Radio WYVC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Michela Robecki, Italian curator and writer based in London. Michela, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you very much for having me.
So I was really intrigued by your book, Mona Lisa to Marge, and that's what I want to talk to you about today, about how the world's greatest artworks entered popular culture. Kind of fascinating idea of visual culture, visual literacy. Can you tell me a little bit about how that book began and grew?
Well, the book started with a very simple question. There are artworks around that have entered popular culture. And sometimes it's quite inexplicable to determine exactly what factor contributed to this. So we started doing a small research, and we narrowed down the field to about 30 art pieces that we know everybody is familiar with, although they don't necessarily know where they come from or what the story behind them. And we started just tracking down their history, and eventually I think we succeeded in explaining why these particular pieces are so popular today.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story of the history. And in writing it, how did that change how you were thinking? One of the things that struck me was, you know, we're talking in a sense about visual literacy, right? Where you're in the art world, I'm in the art world, we're all, you know, somewhat sensitive to visual culture, but it seems in general, in popular culture, there isn't a lot of what I would call visual literacy, the ability to understand and read images. But at the same time, these are images everybody knows. So do you think it helps
Yes.
with understanding? I mean, art, does it bring people closer to art that these images, you know, as you were saying in the book, are on T-shirts and coffee mugs and television shows and advertising, like, you know, The Scream or American Gothic?
That's right. That's a phenomenon that many people think it kind of started in the 60s when the mass media age started, and there was a proliferation of images, and they became more accessible and easier to find. But I personally think that today the barrier between popular culture and so-called high culture is very, very, very thin. And the fact that these images in particular are so popular, it's a proof of that, at least on a visual level. It's true what you said. There is no debate around it. And I'm not sure if this book is designed to, you know, to bridge this gap. But we felt it was important to analyze the etymology of the pieces that we discussed, and how they started, how they came about, and how eventually they reached this very particular status of being so popular to the point of transcend their origins on their context.
Well, and so often, you know, as in with, I loved all the images of, you know, from Michelangelo's Sistine Chapel of God creating Adam, and how that, not even the whole image, but just the hands, the gesture of, you know, these two hands,
right,
one hand creating the other, has entered into kind of a vernacular of how we're all thinking and talking or seeing. But the artwork itself may not be recognized, whereas the screen, you know, we can see maybe different versions of that. But these two hands, in one way, seem like, how could that be copied? But it's what I'm saying is there are some things that I would think, and that must have been interesting for your research, that it's hard to even discern when something has been, you know, used or not, like the example of those hands, because that has been used so much, but it doesn't seem to be an obvious direct reference to the original artwork.
That's right. That's right. Actually, you know, that's a very good example. There are a couple of others. There is also Raphael's Madonna Sistina, which is it's a very popular painting, but the most iconic part of the painting are the two angels at the bottom. These are the two guys that really made it into a wider discourse, a wider visual discourse. It was enormous fun to research this book. Once we established the 30 artworks that we wanted to talk about, we started looking around ourselves, and In a way, I'm still in that kind of mode. I still see every now and then a reference or hints to this particular artworks. And if you look around yourself, you will see them everywhere in very different forms.
I have. The hands in particular, after going through your book, that's just what happened to me. I began recognizing things that I wouldn't have noticed before were actually referencing older artworks, which is fascinating.
Right. Yeah, right. You have something like the E.T. poster, for example, where you have the two hands connecting, or you have, I'm not sure if it's still popular these days, but the Nokia telephone used to, you know, all the Nokia users used to be hailed by this, by the two hands reaching towards each other, and there are so many more. I think I also found a very, very dodgy one that I decided not to use, which was a cigarette commercial where God was handing a packet of cigarettes to man.
Well, I mean, you know, in most of the artists, if not all of them, are no longer living, that all of these works are kind of emulating and have entered into popular culture. But it does happen with contemporary artists as well on a different level, doesn't it?
It does a lot. I see that every day myself. The reason why our book stopped, there is a time spread. It stopped at the beginning of the 60s with Andy Warhol. And the reason why we decided to go for that was because we felt it was important to discern or to draw a line between what's fashionable and what's iconic. Some of these artworks reached their status, their immense popular status, after hundreds of years. So it's very hard to tell with contemporary art if it's something that is happening in the heat of the moment because it's responding to a particular situation or a particular contest, or if it's going to go on for a long time to be. But it's true what you're saying. Contemporary art definitely is part of this discourse. I see a lot of contemporary art around that has been deliberately or not deliberately employed to advertise or promote other things. Yes.
Oh, right. And
it's a good
for the
sign.
Artists, it is. But the artists don't always see that way. I remember talking to interviewing Marina Abramović, and she was talking about how angry she was that a designer had used basically ideas from her early performances with Ulay, where, you know, their hair was braided together and a few other things. And she thought, you know, they're ripping me off.
Yeah, she's right. Yeah, Marina was especially tickled by an episode that I think happened in the early 90s, where Stephen Campbell, the fashion photographer, he staged a photo shooting that was blatantly inspired by an old performance by Ulay and Abramović. I can see why it's annoying to be co-opted, especially when somebody else is making a lot of, you know, is generating a massive revenue and you're not. But, you know, to be honest with you, contemporary art, through the discourse of appropriation, is responsible for a very similar practice. I'm sure you heard about how many cartoonists were upset with Roy Lichtenstein for being copied, and Lichtenstein, his work was sold to museums and made a lot of money, and these guys they were just writing comics for magazines in the 60s, and they just made a minimum, really. So I think it's a vicious circle. It's really hard to tell what's right and what's wrong. I think it's for them to decide if they wanted to make a tribute. I think they should be honest about it. But the
way so many other things got into culture, they never reference it, right? With the E.T. and all the references to Michelangelo. I mean, I suppose it's because of the age, but I would imagine if Michelangelo would have alive, he'd say, wow, Steven Spielberg is making a lot of money.
That's right. Yeah, well, I can't remember exactly what the timeline is, but I think after 60 years or 70 years, all copyrights expired. So I'm not sure if Michelangelo would be entitled to claim any royalties from Spielberg. But, you know, I have to say that in Spielberg's case, I think that falls into the category of unconscious plagiarism. I don't think Spielberg was thinking exactly about that. I think it came somewhere in part of his brain that sure knew about that painting, but it doesn't seem that obvious to me. It doesn't seem that deliberate as some
right.
others.
Because we all know these images so well.
Yeah, that's true. No, that's true. Definitely, we all know these images, and again, it's very difficult to determine if there is a will to do something inspired by these pieces, by these particular artworks, or if. Or as you said, because they're part of our subconscious, because they're so popular, we have just absorbed them.
Absolutely. And when the book came out, what was the reaction from colleagues? Was there anything that surprised you or was particularly noteworthy about how others reacted to the book?
I think one of the most interesting criticisms we received was that we didn't include photography. But the reason for that is because photography is kind of a story unto itself. The minute you decide to include an iconic photography in this kind of book, and there are quite a few that could be, then you enter a very dangerous territory where you need to define what is art photography and what is not.
Well, you'd also be working
with
contemporary artists, really, as opposed to where your cutoff was. Well, I guess there could be early photography, but...
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are images like, you know, I presume the sailor kissing the nurse in Times Square is an iconic image, right? We all know it. And it could have been a candidate for this book, but it's not an art piece. It's photo reporting. It's something else. So I think photography should probably be the subject of a different book, of a book just about photography and how photography has been influential.
Absolutely. And it seems to be a book that would be of enormous use to college students and people who are doing more research. Do you know if it's being used that way? Because it would seem to be an important aspect of understanding, not just about aspects of art history, but again, visual culture and literacy.
I'm not aware of, at the moment, I'm not sure if it's been used that way. But I think the interesting thing about this book is that I see the book as a foundation. I see the book as a starting point. Once you decide to play the game, you can go on forever, really. Ever since we went to print with the book, I found at least 100 more images that I would have loved to include. And it's just a never-ending process, really.
Yeah,
so it could
absolutely.
Be fun to do, actually. It could be a fun game to play. I think what's interesting also, to go back to your initial question about reactions, I think while we were researching the book, what was interesting is that some people denied the connection between their work and the original masterpiece.
Right.
There were a few people that, you know, we got in touch with them saying, look, we're working on this book. Can we have an image of that? Because it's obviously based on this. And they said, oh, no, we just don't see the connection. We just don't want to be there, which was really interesting. Especially
Interesting. That is interesting. and why do you think that is? Because they don't want to recognize that they've been pulling inspiration from classic sources, do you think?
I think so. I think it's part of that because, you know, especially when it comes to advertising and fashion, people are very proud of their own ideas of having been, you know, come up with something original. And I think they weren't quite ready to accept the fact that their work could be based on something else. Or I don't know, or maybe it was a case of being busted. It's also a possibility. The fact is, you know, today with the internet age, it's so much easier to track down where you find something that inspire your work. I think before the 90s, you could get away with it in a big way. Now it's a very different story. Now I think it's just, you know, there's so much visual material available that it's really hard to come up with something inspired by something else and get away with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also it's an interesting point where that contemporary artists might not want to recognize something that's in a relation, but also, you know, talking about iconic images, you know, artists, contemporary artists, all artists really occasionally just make an image that is, I think you use that word, kind of iconic. It's the most, you know, well-known work of their whole body of work, their oeuvre. And so it's, that sometimes is something that artists seem to want to avoid replicating or using again. So maybe there's also a hesitancy on the I mean, that's a little bit of a different issue, but the hesitancy on the part of artists.
Well, it's very interesting, actually. I think artists have, in general, they tend to have mixed feelings about their most popular work. Because it's a mixed blessing, of course. Because on the other way, on the one hand, it makes you recognizable, it just makes you popular, but on the other hand, it pigeonholes you.
Right.
And you're forced to kind of replicate yourself for the rest of your life. So you really need to be smart to avoid that kind of trap. But it's also interesting that it's really difficult to make art and to know exactly what's going to take to create an iconic image. There's no recipe for that. And you can see that because if you think about it, there are very famous artists like Caravaggio or Rembrandt who are great artists, but they never quite managed to create one single piece that everybody knows. Mm-hmm. And then conversely, you have people like Grant Wood, who was like a original painter, and he hit the jackpot once with the American Gothic, and that's it.
Yeah, it's fascinating that can happen within the artist's careers, but I guess it happens within musical careers as well, and a lot of creative
that's
artists.
Right.
I know I was talking to a photographer not long ago, interviewed Judy Dater, whose image was a very famous image of hers was the model Twinka and Imogen Cunningham. Imogen Cunningham was 90 years old. Twinka was completely nude, full frontal, and they're standing on either side of a tree, kind of looking at each other. It looks like old age is finding a kind of forest nymph or something. And that image, she said, was so popular. She, of course, didn't want to create an iconic image, wasn't thinking that. It was just another image. But it's the only image people really know of her entire career, and that was the beginning of her career. So she says, I'm putting together a big book of my work now, and that's the one image I'm going to leave out.
That's right.
It is a mixed blessing, and it's kind of odd that kind of tension between, wanting that kind of popularity and not. But are you planning on doing other books in this series? Because this could go on and on. Really, right?
I think so. I'm not sure if we're gonna go for a number two on the very same subject, but as I said, I'd love to do one on photography. That would be really interesting, or one on contemporary art, of course, and see how contemporary art is influential without us fully having realized that it could be.
Yeah, absolutely. There was something I saw the other day after reading the book. It was I mean, this was the reference to me, but it was a Jack Early show, and with that frieze, and he had this huge pyramid and a glass pyramid, and he constructed it in a way where light came through it, and then there was painting on the walls, and it looked like this rainbow came out of it. It was really exactly like the Pink Floyd album cover that I've seen.
Right, that's right, of course. Yeah, I keep seeing a lot of that too, actually. Damien Hirst's paintings, I've seen the motifs on curtains and fabrics and everywhere. And no, it's really interesting. I think it's kind of, in a way, it's a good sign because it means that contemporary art has a stronger presence than what we think.
Absolutely. And in the preface, Maurizio Cattelan also said some wonderful things. And I know you've interviewed him in the past.
I did. And he was kind enough to write the foreword for our book.
Yeah, which was wonderful. It was a great piece, himself looking at that. And I just thought it was very interesting, his take as well, because some of his works, I imagine, may enter that realm as well, eventually.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But he also himself, he's been very open about how he... about some of his pieces were inspired by other people's work. I think he replicated a picture of Francesca Woodman not too long ago. He turned it into a sculpture. It's a very iconic picture of Woodman with her hanging from a door. And
I just saw that photograph yesterday because there's an exhibit at the Museet in Stockholm, and they're having an exhibit of hers right now. And
right.
That's interesting. Wow, that I just see that connection now. That's fascinating.
But, similarly, if you think of, I don't know if you're familiar with the band Phantom Planet.
Yes, actually, I do know Phantom Planet.
Phantom Planet, they made an album called Raise the Dead, and the cover is a blatant ripoff of one of Cattelan's work, the one where he stuck his gallerist on the wall with tape.
Oh,
if you check it out, it's exactly the same image. So he's Yeah, it's a give and take.
Very
it's a give and take. But if you think about it, like, you know, Barbara Tucker, for example, I can't tell you how many times I've seen ads or covers in books that kind of replicate her icon.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Lawrence Weiner too, his work.
Lawrence Weiner too, exactly. Exactly.
Well, it's a wonderful book you've written, and it's been great talking to you. Is there anything you want to say about what's happening next? There'll be links so that people can get the book or read more about it. But is there anything else you want to say about what you're doing?
No, I mean, it's been fun to write this book, and I've been working in the book industry, in the art book industry, for about 15 years now. My main occupation is being an editor, so it's really, I'm an editor at Fight and Press, and so it's just great to be in a position to actually write something. It was great fun to write this book, and as I said, I'd love to write another one, and we're thinking about it, but this book has been doing really well so far. I think it's been translated in 4 languages already, which is really good.
Well, that's wonderful, because there aren't that many books about art that also, you know, and I don't know if this is what your intention, but in a sense, this book is entering popular culture, right? This is a book that anybody can read. You don't have to be a professor. You don't have to be an art scholar. So perhaps...
Yeah, it's a funny mixed bag, actually, of culture and popular culture. I mean, again, we really try to work without thinking of this divide. And yeah, you don't have to be a scholar to read this book, not at all. Which doesn't mean that it's there's quite a lot of information in it, but it's a very accessible book, I think.
Absolutely.
And it's something that people can relate to, because again, you know, the subject that we are addressing is something that it's just popular.
Well, and for me, the most powerful thing about the book, and the reason I think other people should read the book, is it changed the way I'm looking at the world. You know, and it brought up other ideas, but suddenly I see other images everywhere that are from contemporary art or historical work, and that's pretty wonderful to be able to write something that literally opens people's eyes.
Oh, that's fantastic! Thank you very much. That's exactly what we were hoping to accomplish. So it's really good that you said that. Thank you.
Well, Michele, it's been wonderful talking to you. I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thanks a lot for having me here. It's been a great pleasure. Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIVC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.